This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our weekly program that we like to call Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward, joined by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
Everybody is focused on the Masters Golf Tournament this weekend, as the finest golfers in the world will be taking aim at the ultra-fast greens at Augusta National. But here...
Steve, it was bittersweet that you were eliminated early in the tournament. But you know, as sad as that was, it allows you to be here today.
It does, to fulfill my duties, which is what really matters. And we are the masters of taking aim at hypocrisy and deception.
Yes.
And rhinos, which leads us to our public enemy number one, clear choice this week.
Yes. It was
hands down. There was only one, and his name is Senator Tom Tillis. He is a registered, and I will emphasize that, registered as a Republican. He runs as a Republican and has been elected as a Republican to represent the people of North Carolina. However, he does have a tendency from time to time of stepping across the precipice into the dark side to join fellow Republicans in name only, as they sometimes like to play footsies and handsies with the other side of the aisle, the Democrats, and we're seeing him at it again this week.
Well, don't forget his failed attempt to take out Pete Hegseth.
He was part of that failed coup as well. But you know, there's, of course, it's been a week of frenzied back and forth about the Trump tariff strategy, which is, by the way, a strategy. It is not a wrecking ball, as the media would have you believe. It is not a chaotic sort of impulse that came over Trump one morning while he was drinking a Diet Coke with his Frosted Flakes. This has been his lifelong ambition to right the wrongs that have been imposed on our country by these tariff imbalances. However, this is also a time for a weak-kneed, weak-spined politician like a Tom Tillis to show us his true colors. And what has he done? He, this past week, joined a group of Republican lawmakers pushing back on the tariff plan and co-sponsoring legislation that would put guardrails, that means stop, the president's ability...
Guardrails, to yes. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. It would put guardrails on the president's ability to impose tariffs without support from Congress. He's one of the, I think, seven co-sponsors of this, along with some typical, you know, rhinos like Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, Mitch the Turtle McConnell of Kentucky, and the usual folks that you would expect to be in opposition to the MAGA movement, even in an area as important as the tariff imbalance war that is underway right now. Tillis was on a panel this week interviewing, or I guess really the word is interrogating, one of Donald Trump's lead tariff strategists. Play clip one.
I do have a question about, at the end of the day, the other thing in management consulting we like to focus on is this concept of one throat to choke. In other words, when you're finally taking a look at a strategy, someone has to own it, and you can't say that it's the president or the vice president. So my first question to you, in this scenario, the decision maker who decided the alla prima approach, who has obviously had to have spent time anticipating what we saw in the markets and some of the pushback, I'm assuming this all got gamed out because it's a novel approach, it needed to be thought out. Whose throat do I get to choke if this proves to be wrong?
Well, Senator, you can certainly always talk to me. But
are you at the tip of the spear?
Well, I'm at the tip of the spear for certainly.
Did you propose the alla prima approach?
So first of all, I would push back, Senator, just a little bit on this. We've excluded pharmaceuticals and semiconductors approach.
So let me get
and
to
we've excluded
question.
USMCA.
Well, a little combative there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and that is, those are both Republicans. And one of them is not supporting the popular elected president. By the way, one of them is supporting President Trump and the people's agenda, and one of them is trying to undermine it. And guess who is who? Oh, wait, our Senator Tillis is the one who's trying to undermine President Trump's policy.
Tillis was essentially questioning the administration's strategy and was looking for accountability for the potential economic repercussions of imposing tariffs, especially to the extent that they might harm his constituents and key industries in North Carolina, such as agriculture. But let's step away from this idea of the harm of imposing tariffs. What about the harm of generations of American manufacturing workers in mills and plants?
Losing their jobs.
Who have lost their jobs.
Killing entire towns such as Robbins and Laurinburg and Wagram.
Killing multi-generational family reliance on these factory jobs,
right,
that made things in America. It wasn't just jobs. It was what came out the other end, which was American manufactured goods that were the envy of the world. And we have deliberately, over the past several decades, shipped all of that offshore so that it is made by cheap labor, sometimes child labor. It is made with less quality control. And here we are. And these clowns, like Tillis, are worried about the short-term effect on a 401k or on his constituents, worrying that they may not be able to retire tomorrow and might have to put it off a month or something.
Well,
these made-up false scenarios of gloom and doom.
So Tillis talked metaphorically, I assume, about one throat to choke. So hey, Tom. So exactly whose throat do we, the people, get a choke for multi-generational unsustainable debt? The export of American jobs, the imposition on people's constitutional rights. Tom, who do we, the people, get a choke?
But you know,
I would say that's you. He's the guy who's voted for this, you know, infrastructure, trillion-dollar boondoggle here, trillion-dollar boondoggle there. We the people need to start choking, our, metaphorically speaking, people like Tom Tillis.
Well, that opportunity will be coming soon because he will be up for re-election next year in 2026 during the midterms, seeking another term of 6 years, God help us. And he will be primary. There's no question about it. It's just the question is, who is the primary opponent that can actually defeat him? But and he knows this is coming. And his calculation is to play the middle of the road on these
right.
tariffs so that if Armageddon, financial Armageddon occurs, he can hearken back to these hearings. He wasn't done yet. Play clip two.
I'm just trying to get my head around the logic of an olla prima approach, and I'm waiting to be I'm waiting to see it be successful. But it just seems like we've decided to begin a trade war on all fronts. And that's okay if the person who thought this through has an answer for why you go after partners that we have a very long storied relationship with. Maybe we give some developing countries a break because we're trying to actually get their economies functioning, make them look to the West versus to Chinese investment. So it just seems like I'm getting my head around the olla prima approach. I'm not condemning it because I'm not a trade expert, but I still at some point, and I understand that you are the trade rep. So if you own this decision, then I'll look to you to figure out if we're going to be successful. If you don't on the decision, I'm just trying to figure out whose throat I get to choke if it's wrong, and who I put up on a platform and thank them for the novel approach that was successful if they're right.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be running to the MAGA side of the equation when we finally defang China, and we have actual functional trade deals with all of these other countries that have suddenly seen the light. The Wall Street Journal dares to say in a headline that the actions to pause the tariffs on all of these other countries was an example of Trump blinking. In other words, he was backing down. That is not the case at all. That is a misinterpretation.
Oh, he won. Trump yes. won. Trump's strategy. Well, first of all, before we start talking about the greatest of all time presidents, Trump's brilliant strategy on this, what is alla prima? I mean, I thought it was something on an Italian menu. I'm like, what is like al dente, right? What does al prima mean?
Yeah, I like a nice alla primavera when I sit down for an Italian feast. But
I don't know. Maybe it makes Tom feel smart. But anyway,
I think that means a foot to the floor, pedal to the metal.
It actually, I looked it up at first attempt. It means you try to get it right the first attempt. I don't think he knew what he was saying, or I looked up the wrong word. But anyway, Trump's strat. We should get to. We need to get our crack research team on the bottom of that. To the
alla prima.
Yes, yeah. Alla prima. Or maybe it's some sort of prosecco. It's like a brand of prosecco or something.
Yeah, maybe it's what he was drinking before the hearing.
Right. Anyway. Look, Trump's strategy on this was brilliant because there was no way he could lose, no way to lose. First of all, no country can exist, certainly China, right? He took China's biggest asset and turned it against him. China's biggest asset is their trade surplus with the entire world, which means China's 100% dependent on world trade. That's their greatest strength, and Trump used it as their greatest weakness because they cannot live without world trade. So his strategy, there was no downside. You know, he imposed these tariffs, right? And countries could blink or they didn't blink. So all the rest of the world blinked except for China. So all of a sudden, we're going to be even level playing partners with the rest of the world, and they're going to be economic allies, and then China's going to be at a disadvantage. He just isolated China. Or China could have blinked as well. And if China blinked, then Trump won too.
Yeah. I mean, we should be in a
winning.
Right.
And there's people out, there's people up in Carthage protesting the president and administration who are actually doing the right thing for the people, not the military industrial complex, not the academic industrial complex, not lobbyists, not bankers. They're doing what's best for the American worker and the American, you know, bringing back manufacturing. And there's people out protesting.
Well, we'll get to those glassy-eyed zombies a little later in the program because they do need to be addressed. So, you know, we always like to bring up who was our runner-up in Public Enemy Number One land this week. And there's always plenty of runners-up. Usually we have to whittle it down considerably. But I think it was an easy choice this week for the runner-up. And that would be the criminals who run the nation's pharmaceutical companies who rolled out the mRNA, not a vaccine, solution to the COVID-19 outbreak of 2020, 5 years ago, believe it or not, because what do we have in front of us now? A new landmark study has been authored and published in the International Journal of Cardiovascular Research and Innovation. And it basically tells us this, that myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart, after SARS-2 infection, which is COVID infection, versus COVID-19 vaccination. And what did they find? They found that infections have caused more cases of myocarditis than the immunizations is, in fact, a falsehood. Their research led them to conclude the opposite, that the vaccines are the leading cause of myocarditis inflammation, especially in younger people, which is where we've seen it almost universally.
I suspect vaccines are also the leading cause of young athletes in their, you know, 20s collapsing dead on the you know, football field or basketball court or whatever, you know.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. So these authors, including some really people who have been at the forefront of this research, Peter McCullough and Nicholas Holscher, among others, et al., as they like to say in academia, they have concluded the following. We urge governments to remove the COVID-19 mRNA products from the market due to the well-documented risk of myocardial damage, a risk that is strongest for younger males, 40 and younger. So very important breakthrough, and as if we didn't know it already, the pharma industry has, this will go down in history as one of the great human tragedies. All of the illnesses and permanent physical maladies that have been imposed by this, by these forced, in many cases, forced, required jabs for through the mRNA technology.
You know, I have, Lisa and I have a couple of friends who are cardiologists, right? And all of them have been, both of them have been like super busy, like at work all the time since the COVID vaccines. And they have told us, I mean, years ago, they said, yeah, no, this is vaccine damage. So the medical profession, you know, the people who actually are out there, you know, nose to the grindstone treating this, they know. It's just, yeah. You know, the mainstream media and the, you know, the politicized Center for Disease Control, Mandy, what's her name down there?
Cohen, yeah.
They were doing everything they could to cover up the science right. And keep the truth from coming out.
Right. So there was a lot going on last week. Of course, we say that on this show, Taking Aim, every Saturday. We say that there was a lot going on. And that's the world we live in. You probably didn't miss the fact that there was a lot being said about the tariffs. It was on the tip of the tongue of everyone, I think, to some degree or another. Well, not everyone, because some people are completely ignorant. But what you did not probably hear a lot about is why the tariffs are necessary, why they are long overdue. You didn't hear a succinct explanation for that, but we found that one. Victor Davis Hanson, play clip three.
China has prohibitive tariffs. So does Vietnam. So does Mexico. So does Europe. So do a lot of countries. So does India. But if tariffs are so destructive of their economies, why is China booming? How did India become an economic powerhouse when it has these exorbitant tariffs on American imports? How did Vietnam, of all places, become such a different country, even though it has these prohibitive tariffs? Why isn't Germany, before its energy problems, why wasn't it a wreck? It's got tariffs on almost everything that we send them. How is the EU even functioning with these tariffs? I thought tariffs destroyed an economy, but they seem to like them. And they're angry that they're no longer asymmetrical.
So there you have it. I mean, I think that lays it out. They're angry because, you know, the gig is up and the day of reckoning has come. And that was very well. I couldn't have said it any better than Victor Davis Hanson.
Well, I can.
Okay.
So.
All right, Victor Davis Hensley.
Yes. Yeah. So first of all, yeah. How did America become a world power with high tariffs? And how come our decline has started when the establishment sold us on this lie of open trade, which free trade is great, but what we ended up with was unequal trade where our partners were screwing us. Trump's 100% correct. So it became bastardized. But the point is, we've all been lied to. We've all been lied to that tariffs are bad. And that, once again, that's the crony establishment who controls the media, they control the education and all this stuff. And what you're seeing is you're seeing the results. You're seeing the overlords who, Steve, you're absolutely right. They're terrified to see their little corporate profits and, you know, globalism falling apart. And unfortunately, they mobilize their mind-numbed robots who have been trained their whole life that tariffs are bad. It's all a giant psyop. That's exactly. been revealed. Yes. Look, we can see the PSYOP. I mean, Doge has revealed it. Money was coming through USAID, going through these NGOs and funding all these NGOs, all of which, many of which who were, you know, well, they were either smuggling in illegal aliens and conspiring to, you know, protect people in this country illegally, or they were like doing PSYOPs, or they were like, you know, tearing down dams that people wanted to keep. It's insane the misinformation and the money the federal government's been funneling to perpetuate the misinformation and conduct PSYOPs and outright lies to the American people, generations of it. And they used our school systems, they used the media, they used these non-government organizations, they used the nonprofits.
That's right.
They used bloggers.
And we have grown-ups in charge right now in Washington. We voted for
this. Who are stopping this?
And we voted for it in huge numbers. And now the rest of us citizens have to be adults as well and stay the course and stop whining.
And keep people like our Senator Tillis, Republican, from undermining, reforming all this stuff. That's what Tillis is doing. He's protecting all this stuff.
Something else we were keeping an eye on last week involves the interminable showdown for Supreme Court between Jefferson Griffin and his opponent, who is a sitting North Carolina Supreme Court Associate Justice, Allison Riggs. You'll recall that back in November, the election concluded with Riggs leading by just north of 750 votes. That deficit has not changed in all these months, but what has changed is the status of where this is going legally. Of course, Griffin has challenged in the courts more than 60,000 ballots, which he says were not properly cast by the voters who cast them, and because they lacked certain ID verifications and the like. So now here we are. You had an appeals court rule 2-1 in favor of Griffin, saying that they should begin immediately a process to cure the ballots, which is a fancy word for revisit the ballots and require those who cast them to go back and to the extent that they are able, provide the missing information to make the ballots valid. But what happened next? The North Carolina Supreme Court, with Riggs recusing herself, came along and voted to put a stay on the decision by the appellate panel. So now we're back in stalemate mode. So I turned to one of my favorite North Carolina analysts on all things politics and the courts, Andrew Dunn, author of Longleaf Politics. He believes that eventually we will get back to the 15-day cure process that the Court of Appeals officially called for, and that it will become, in his words, a circus. Democrats will launch an all-out field operation to get voters to update their info in time to protect Riggs' lead so she'll remain on the court, which, by the way, the Republicans still control, but, you know, he never want to let a seat get away. But then he writes, the bottom line is that even with this ruling by the Supreme Court, this case is still months and maybe years from a final resolution. So, you know, at some point, yes, I would like to see Jefferson Griffin on the Supreme Court. I think he's worthy as anyone can be to occupy one of those seats. But, you know, at some point, if the left is able to weaponize this and turn it into some kind of a hyper-negative, you know, we may have to just accept the result and make sure it never happens again.
No, never accept the result. So two things, right? So first of
all, you can choke me then.
Yes. Who do I choke? So yeah. First thing, look, it's going to be more difficult than they think to get 60,000 non-existent voters. You know, there's 60,000 voters, many of whom are non-existent, to update their registration, because it's very difficult to get non-existent people to update their non-existent information while the President Trump U.S. Department of Justice is watching, because there's a difference now, right? In 2020, after the election, Biden had the U.S. Department of Justice, right? And they weren't looking into anything, right? And they didn't. The U.S. Department of Justice didn't care what North Carolina did in any fishy ballots. So the North Carolina Department of Elections and counties and state could do whatever they wanted because the federal government turned a blind eye. Well, guess what? There's a new sheriff in town, and it's going to be very difficult for them to pull off the fraud that they're attempting. My other observation about this, and I've watched this, what's her name? Is it Harris? She is, I mean, she's out attacking him, and all he's doing is following, he is the other dude, what are their names?
Jefferson Griffin is,
yeah, Griffin
is the candidate, right. And Allison Riggs is the incumbent.
Riggs, that's it. The guy, what's his name again?
Jefferson Griffin.
Thank you. Griffin. He's just he is just exercising his legal rights to appeal. And Riggs is a sitting Supreme Court justice who's arguing that he should not be able to exhaust his legal remedies. That makes, I mean, you go out and read her social media. She is saying that
Jefferson Griffin.
Thank you, Griffin. I can't remember.
Who wore the uniform, by the way.
Right, right. She is saying that Jefferson Griffin cannot exhaust his legal remedies. That's what she's doing. That makes her unfit to be a judge. She should just keep her mouth shut. She should say, I respect, although I disagree with him, I respect his ability to exercise and exhaust his legal remedies.
And now, that's a very good point, and I respect that point.
And Griffin and Riggs, I have it now.
I just don't want to see this spiral into some kind of talking point the next election cycle. That's my only concern about that. Anyway, we need to move on because the pace of the show is fast. Try to keep up. Many of us were underwhelmed by the gathering of ne'er-do-wells, poorly dressed, unkempt hair, some of them probably in desperate need of a high-powered shower, which we'll get to that topic later, too.
Most from out of town.
Most from out of town that gathered in the Carthage Square last Saturday, a week ago, around 1 p.m. That was their marching orders, to be there by 1. All of them with a variety of homemade signs. And the real takeaway from that, which, you know, I didn't attend it, of course, because I might have been forced to get
we were at a Trump boat parade at Lake Norman.
Yeah, I might have been needed over medication to survive that. But what I noticed from the videos and the still photos that were being posted on social media by some of our fellow patriots is that the signs reflected a completely disunified protest. In other words, they didn't know what they were protesting about. One sign was hands off my Social Security. Another sign was, you know, we need education. Another sign is, you know, save the planet. Across the board, the usual, you know, the usual sort of hollow protests about nothing. They were angry literally about everything. Therefore, their protest accomplished nothing. They did, however, have a few of their completely unhinged comrades who wandered into the street to try to
block traffic.
Yeah. Not to try to, they did essentially block traffic, including any vehicle that might be bearing an American flag or a Trump decal of any kind. And we have video verification that this did occur. I believe law enforcement decided to sort of let it go because they didn't want the protesters to feel like they were, you know, having the desired effect. They wanted to just sort of let it slide. I guess I get that approach. I, for one, would have dragged them by their toenails across the pavement.
You know, so look, local law enforcement could have called Quantico Tactical for a wide variety of less lethal munitions, right, to include flashbangs, rubber bullets, and CS gas. So
yeah, why didn't they think of that?
You know, next time I'll give them a call in advance. I'll make a sales call on the Carthage Police Department.
Well, there inevitably will be more of these. They went, it was a very highly orchestrated, very well-funded day of false rage last Saturday. And, of course, the left is trumpeting the fact that these protests occurred with thousands gathered in the major cities, and there were protests in Raleigh and Asheville here in North Carolina, and D.C. and New York, and the usual places where people have no jobs, no life, and nothing but permanent misery motivating them. And they're also motivated by the by the free food and beverage that they undoubtedly received and whatever stipend they were given, a cash stipend to show up. They were valued by that. But I want to point out to you the stark contrast between these protests venting anger about everything versus what we're seeing on our college campuses as Turning Point USA and its founder and leader, Charlie Kirk, have gone back to the campuses just in the past week. He was at the University of South Carolina, I believe. He was at the University of Illinois. He was heading to Michigan State at the end of the week. And what these rallies are showing is that young people, young college students, are 100% tuned into the MAGA movement,
right,
and what it could mean for their futures.
Yes.
They finally have optimism about the future again.
Amen.
And they are outnumbering any kind of protest like we saw,
right,
in Carthage. They're turning people away on these campuses.
Yep.
And 5 years ago, when Charlie Kirk was doing these rallies, you know, he'd have a tent and a table, and he'd have maybe
rioters against him.
He'd have 20 people show up, 18 of whom wanted to, you know, kill him, and two who wanted to, you know, get an autograph. And now he's got thousands
of followers
on these campuses, and it is really an inspired movement. And for once, mostly it's young men. There's still a lot of younger women who are, because of their, you know, the whole abortion thing, will never come around to the MAGA movement. Unfortunately, I hope they will. But it's the young college men who see the light, and this is a movement. This is not just some and this is viral stuff. This is not, these people aren't being paid to show up.
Right.
They're not.
Right.
They might get a free T-shirt out of it or something if they happen to catch one being thrown into the crowd. But that's about it. They are there to sort of immerse themselves in the free air that is the MAGA movement, to breathe it in, instead of the pot that used to waft across our campuses. Now it's the air of freedom and liberation from the government goons. It's a wonderful thing to behold.
You know, when I did campaign stops and speeches and stuff, I didn't throw T-shirts out in the crowd. You know, I would just the lucky people, when I like stage dived into the crowd,
yes,
the lucky people who could like pass me around, you know,
while
I crowd surfed. Those were the truly lucky people.
The lifetime of memories of that physical contact.
But getting back to the thing, my observation on the crowd was dovetails exactly like yours. If you look at the crowd up there in Carthage, right, there were two groups of people, and there were groups noticeably absent. So there was the old timing out leftist, you know, who are bitterly clinging to their, you know, 60s and 70s leftism and radical liberalism, right? The other, and then anyone there that was under 40, or 98% of the people there under 40, they were all radical LGBTQ activists, right? So that's the crowd that was there. There were the old timing out hippies who are angry about everything, as you pointed out, and there was the militant LGBTQ. Absent was anyone else under the age of 40 and any minorities. And you've seen this lately here in Moore County. There's been a couple high visibility things. There's that fake thing, that hit job they did on Richard Hudson that was sponsored by the NAACP. It was held in West Southern Pines,
yes,
a historic black community. And guess who showed up and guess who didn't show up? It was a bunch of white leftists,
yes,
liberals, and radical LGBTQ. Yes. Very, almost no black people or Hispanic people, minorities aren't showing up,
right,
because the minorities are supporting Donald Trump. That's the real story, because they realize that President Trump is the first president in forever who is doing what the people want. He's advocating for jobs. He is the first president since he was last president to advocate for the, you know, let's return manufacturing. Let's make Robbins great again. Let's make Laurinburg great again. Let's get blue collar jobs and let's return them to America. And let's get wages up, not for do nothing government jobs, but for jobs that actually produce our economy and grow our gross national product.
And as an example of the kind of change we're seeing on these college campuses in terms of the the students waking up to not only the hypocrisy of the left overall, but the hypocrisy that is ingrained in the culture of their campuses. We have this young man at none other than Brown University. I mean, as about as Marxist left as a university can be, Brown University in Rhode Island. His name is Alex Xi. He is a student, and he decided to do his own Elon Musk Doge project on campus. He sent out an email to 3,800 administrators at Brown a couple of weeks ago, and he asked one simple question. Describe what tasks you performed in the past week. He asked the administrators at Brown. 2 days later, the university alerted Alex Xi that they were reviewing his emails based on allegations that he had, quote, emotionally harmed several employees and, quote, misrepresented himself by saying he was a reporter for a conservative student newspaper, which actually exists on the Brown campus. I couldn't believe it, the Brown Spectator. In the letter, officials also claimed he violated operational procedures and demanded that he return any confidential information, warning that his access to university data systems could be restricted. They were ticked off that he sent out these emails asking these administrators to be held to account. This is Alex Xi, play clip 5.
Brown is pursuing a preliminary review against me for 4 different charges. They're saying it's emotional and psychological harm. They're saying violation of operational rules. They're saying misrepresentation. Because I said I'm a reporter for the Brown Spectator, and that's not recognized by the Student Activities Office, that must mean it's misrepresentation. And the last charge is invasion of privacy, again, for publishing people's names and job titles that Brown himself publishes on the internet. And so, again, it's not really clear how that's confidential.
Wow.
So, you know what? Here's what I can say with certainty. This dude is so awesome. This young man is awesome. And you know what this young man did? He just earned himself a front row seat for President Trump's next State of the Union address. He'll be there right front and center and be used as a great example of how liberal academia just, you know, tries to go against conservatives.
And young Alex.
Emotional distress.
Young Alex is getting some media mileage out of this. In fact, the clip that you just heard was taken from an interview he did with Charlie Kirk on Charlie's show. And he's also has one of these rights organizations called FIRE, which is coming to his defense, basically backing his contention that he has a right to know. Paying $93,000 a year for tuition at Brown, that he thinks he has a right to know what the heck these administrators do, and he's trying to categorize them. He's created categories for them based on their responses, like bootlicker and you know and what was the other one involving a masking tape. Masking tape director, something like that. Anyway, this organization points out that Brown's response flies in the face of its due process and free expression guarantees and threatens to chill student reporting on campus. Due process is essential not just to guarantee defendants a fair shake, but to uphold the legitimacy of campus disciplinary proceedings. Alex Xi had more to say about that. Play clip 6.
I think it's elitist. That's the way that I would sum it up, is that they're coming after people who espouse more right-leaning, like libertarians and conservatives. They don't come after the far left, the pro-Palestine people who are breaking actual rules. Right. And also just think about the price tag, $93,000 a year. Financial aid is not going to cut it for a lot of people. And so people just can't go to Brown. And so this is elitism, plain and simple. They only want to be accessible to people that are on the coasts that can afford this price tag and have those trendy, progressive, elite perspective. And if you think DEI is bad, even if you just want to criticize the bloat, that's not acceptable at a place like Brown University.
Correct, Alex. Well, by the way, I referenced the organization backing him. FIRE, it is Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, and you can learn more about his case by going to thefire.org, thefire.org. Did you have more to say about the Brown University situation?
No, I look forward to seeing Alex on the front row of the next State of the Union address.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, a really probably the most disturbing survey that I saw last week, the headline in Blaze Media, leftists are normalizing, quote, assassination culture. And here's what we're talking about. The Network Contagion Research Institute releases a disturbing report that finds that assassination culture is on the rise among those who self-identify as politically left of center. The survey questioned 1,264 U.S. residents, with 31% saying that it would be at least somewhat justified to murder Elon Musk, and 38% of those surveyed saying it would be at least somewhat justified to murder President Trump. Those percentages increased drastically to 48 and 55% respectively when isolating the left of center respondents, which were described as either far left, liberal, or slightly liberal. 40% of those surveyed stated that it would be at least somewhat acceptable to destroy a Tesla dealership in protest as part of their uncontained rage. The report tracks the assassination culture, starting with the December shooting of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, and the report attributes the shift in part to social media, which, you know, shouldn't come as any surprise. But the point is, how long, and by the way, no big surprise here, I'm surprised that the numbers aren't even higher, that assassination culture is being normalized. And what do you expect when you have a corrupt media comparing Donald Trump 7 days a week to Adolf Hitler, claiming that he is an existential threat, claiming that he's trying to destroy our democracy? Over and over again, the messaging never stops. What would you expect?
So, Steve, this is they didn't normalize it. They've done it all along. And it's actually two things. The violence of the left is a result of the big government control of media propaganda that comes from the leaders of the left. And let's just step back in time. You know, this article said they're just now normalizing it. Now let's go back 6 months ago when that dude assassinated that CEO in New York City. The left cheered, and he's their hero.
Luigi.
Yeah. Let's go back, 8 years, 9 years, where that leftist showed up and tried to kill the Republican congressional baseball team.
Yes, a Bernie Sanders volunteer.
Yep. Let's not forget about, in the 80s, you had Rwanda and, all that stuff. That was communists that were going around and chopping arms off of creating a genocide.
Yes.
We could go back to the 50s and 60s. And let's not forget our friends Mao and Pol Pot, who killed, Mao killed 30, 40 million people. There's some violence for you.
That we know of.
Let's go to the 30s, and we had Hitler's brown shirt, National Socialist. Hitler was a socialist. Hitler was just a different degree of socialist than, Stalin was a communist. Hitler was a socialist. It's all the left. So in the 30s, we had the brown shirts. Before that, in the 1917 in St. Petersburg, we had the Bolsheviks, right? So the left has a long tradition of political violence. They're not normalizing it. They're just like continuing it, let's say.
And among those who are responsible for creating this
Abraham Lincoln
shot by a lefty actor named John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, the Alec Baldwin of his time.
Exactly. Yeah, he was indeed. But I have to point out that even our local newspaper, The Pilot, feeds into this culture. A letter published at midweek last week goes right back to the Trump is Hitler narrative. Germany, and I'm quoting the letter, Germany was a democracy until 1935. Hitler changed all that in as little as 8 to 10 years. He confiscated and burned books, closed libraries and higher educational institutions. And he lays out this litany of things that Hitler did as if to strongly imply that this is part of the Trump agenda. And then he concludes,
Hitler was a socialist.
Yeah. None of these things are happening as far as I know. The libraries being closed, educational institutions shutting down.
No.
In fact, what they're doing is the educational institutions are threatening their viability by feeding the hatred of anti-Semitism, and Trump's yanking their federal funding.
Trump is making them.
But he's not closing them.
Right. He is. He's enforcing constitutional law, and he's making them obey Supreme Court decisions.
Then this guy says that, Hitler disposed of his political opponents. Well, what has the left tried to do to Donald Trump for the last four years? Are you kidding me?
Shot CEO, tried to kill the congressional Republicans, Rwanda genocide, Mao, Chairman Mao, Pol Pot,
and then what?
The communists in Russia. So who tries to get rid of their political enemies again?
The intent in the courts was to put Trump away in prison for the rest of his life. But the intent outside the courts was to shoot him in the head.
Right. They tried that twice. They tried that twice.
And this idiot, who the pilot, you know, should bear some responsibility for publishing these kinds of letters, such as this one by Mr. Dennis Brophy of Pinehurst.
Brophy.
It scares me to think that this person's driving around loose on the streets. He concludes his letter by saying, "Today sounds hauntingly similar." And he warns, as Churchill said in 1948, quote, "Those that fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it," end quote. Well, I think we're doomed to see a continuation of this deranged, unhinged leftist culture. It's one thing to write a letter to the editor. It's quite another thing when you start reading survey results that people are just fine with assassination attempts. I think that's a serious problem. And it's up to the left, by the way, to put an end to it, and they have, you know, people who are there putting forth as their next generation leaders, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. However,
are so screwed. They have no future leaders.
As the eloquent senator from Louisiana, John Kennedy pointed out, don't expect a lot of inspiring leadership from AOC. Play clip four.
What do you think of the new leadership, Jasmine, AOC, and Bernie?
I consider Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez to be the leader of the Democratic Party. She's entitled to her opinion. I'm entitled to mine. As I've said about her before, I think she's the reason there are directions on a shampoo bottle. our plan for Our plan for dealing with her is called Operation Let Her Speak.
I love that. Just let her keep talking, because all you're going to do is end up with more crazy. And you know, it's not just her. It's Ilhan Omar. It's that knucklehead Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, who did his 25 hour verbal diarrhea fest on the floor of the Senate. It's this Jasmine Crockett, the representative from Texas.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, it's all, it's just say all of them. So what about this de-extinct extinction is here?
Well, that was an interesting development. This has actually been going on for several years when I went back and looked into it. It just has been sort of under the radar. There's a bioscience organization based in Dallas that is extremely well-funded with all kinds of venture capital that is out there trying to figure out, and they have now succeeded, how you extract the DNA from extinct animals, in this case, a wolf from more than 10,000, some say up to 13,000 years ago that it has been extinct, the dire wolf, D-I-R-E, dire wolf. They have used the DNA from the remains of these dire wolves that have been dug up who knows where. They've combined it with the current matter, the living matter of the gray wolf, and they have spawned these dire wolf puppies. They literally have de-extincted the dire wolf, they say. Now, if you read more closely, what they're really doing is creating a sort of near duplication of the dire wolf. It's not, they can't guarantee that it's going to be. Who knows? These things might turn out to be
Godzilla comes to
freaks
mind.
Of nature.
Godzilla. They've seen this movie.
Yes, and they've talked about wanting to de-extinct the woolly mammoth.
Well, hold up. So
what could possibly go wrong? And look, the dodo bird. And I'm like, well, we've already done that. He was in the White House for 4 years.
It would be great. It would be great to revive the dodo bird. Then we could like reestablish, like that island's economy could come back because they could repopulate with dodo birds and the indigenous population could charge people to come and club them to death.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? It could revive an entire economy. But here's where I'm at on this. On one hand, I'm torn, right? Because we've all seen the movie Jurassic Park. I mean, they literally made a movie to warn us about this, right? On the other hand, I would really like a saber-toothed tiger. I mean, wouldn't it be cool to have like a saber-toothed tiger?
It would.
Yeah. So I say, look, I have a clone cat, full disclosure. I have a clone cat.
I think that's quite well known within a certain circle of people.
Yes. And I look forward to that clone cat evolving into a saber-toothed tiger.
What concerns me about the whole de-extinction process is that eventually you know that the LGBTQ crowd is going to come for these scientists and demand that they de-extinct these animals in a transgender state. So that there's de-extinction, equity, and equality, don't you
that,
know?
That neighbor cat that bullies my cat, when my cat, say, Buddy the saber-toothed tiger, shows up, that neighborhood bully cat will no longer be the neighborhood bully cat.
By the way, we have a little bit of time left. I wanted to bring up something that everybody needs to know about. We have a local rehab facility here in Moore County over there in the St. Joseph's of the Pines footprint over there off of, what is that, McDeeds Creek Road or over there by the school?
It's out there, yeah.
There's a rehab facility there, and I have a dear friend of mine who has been in there lately rehabbing from a recent medical episode, and I was alerted by her about, a week or more ago, that there was believe it or not, a COVID outbreak in the facility. Now, my reaction was, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you're not hearing about any COVID cases at all to speak of. But apparently one person tested positive, and then they started testing everybody. And of course, so, you know, 2020 called and it wants its hysteria back. But so here we go at this facility in Moore County. So I'm in touch with my friend, and she says they put me in isolation for 10 days. Well, that's also so very 2021.
Right.
In fact, I think if you go to the CDC guidelines right now, they don't even recommend that anymore. Maybe 3 or 4 days, but not 10 days. So they isolated this woman, who's, by the way, a trooper. I mean, she doesn't complain. She stays the course. She's tough as she can be. And then... after she tests positive and they put her in isolation, I'm checking in with her and I ask her, well, what are they doing? Are they prescribing therapeutic drugs to help you feel better, to help you recover more quickly, such as ivermectin? I was told that she was point blank told that ivermectin would not be administered because, quote, the physician involved was following the facts, which is to say, repeating the false narrative that ivermectin and these other drugs like remdesivir and
hydrochloricline or whatever, yeah. Yes.
I can never get that one out. But anyway, no therapeutics are being administered to this person and apparently anyone else who's tested positive over there. I think this is something that the County Board of Health needs to look into.
They should.
Because it's just unnecessary to be adhering to these now disproven myths about treating COVID.
So they lock them down, they put them in isolation, they cause this panic, but they won't give them anything to treat it. That's like not logical. Anyway.
Before we go, I want to draw your attention to a project ongoing right now. Did you know that there are more than 1,200 babies born every year to junior enlisted families at Fort Bragg? 1,200 babies. They require care and attention and love and affection. One of our locals, Lydia Bosch, is leading a project to create baby bundles. Baby bundles. You need to learn all about what goes into the baby bundle. And you can do that by texting Lydia at 910-528-4405. Clothing, blankets, medicine spoons, diapers, baby wipes, and more. Baby Bundles 2025. Get on board. David?
Steve.
That music tells me that we are running out of time.
We are out of time.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. I'm Steve Woodward. He's David Hensley. And we've been taking aim.